Hello everyone, my name is Raina Malhotra and welcome to Teen Scientist. Here on the show, I bring you stories of groundbreaking innovation in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math entirely from a teenage perspective. Doing our audio engineering is James Johnson. Today's segment is very special and unlike anything I've personally ever done before in the program. I'm currently recording in the facility of Weather Trends International in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and I'm very excited to introduce my guest tonight, the CEO and co-founder of Weather Trends International and U.S. Air Force Gulf War veteran, Captain Bill Kirk. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you? Good to be here.
I'm very, very good, and that's great to hear. Thank you for joining us today. Now, before we dive into the groundbreaking technology that you have here at Weather Trends International, we want to start by getting to know a little bit more about you. So could you briefly explain a little bit about yourself, what you do, and some background on your education?
Sure. So I am the real Captain Kirk. Not that imposter on TV, so if you know Star Trek. Always been fascinated with weather. Young kid, grew up in Hawaii, blessed to kind of experience crazy Hawaii weather, and they do have weather. And went into the Air Force, Rutgers, meteorology. So again, I've done a lot of things here, but again, this is my passion. I think you'll find any scientist, if you do what you were born to do, you love what you're doing. So it's not a job, it's just the it's a livelihood. It's fun.
Yeah. And so you said you were originally from Hawaii. What was it that sparked your fascination with weather that pushed you to study at a school so far away from home?
So the only thing that I remember, maybe that you might remember, is Sandy, Hurricane Sandy, right? Mm-hmm. So I always say Floyd, but that was like 22 years ago. So Sandy was a recent big storm, but imagine that storm for a week. That's what we had in Hawaii. It was literally a week-long storm. It was called a Kona low, and it was about 100 inches of rain and winds 50, 60 miles an hour for a week. And it was just, as a 6, 7, 8 year old, right? It was just the epic storm. And it just really got me interested. What's happening here? And I wanted to study that science. What happened?
And then you went to Rutgers. What did you study there?
Meteorology. So again, meteorology, you think, you just look outside the window and it's going to be snowing today, right? It's a lot of physics, a lot of math, a lot of calculus, dynamics, fluid dynamics. It's basically the atmosphere is a fluid. So you're predicting that fluid through physics and a lot of math, more math than I knew of. So again, it was that was the degree, was 30 some years ago.
And then directly after university, you went to the U.S. Air Force in Tampa and served for over 4 years. So firstly, thank you for your service. But how was this experience and how did it shape you as a person?
So unfortunately, so again, as a physicist, you're trained in the fluid dynamics. The weather's always changing. Right? That's why you hear, it's going to be great on the weekend. And then by Thursday, say, nope, the weekend's going to be snowy. Right? So that's physics. That's meteorology. It's changing. One thing, a famous general, you probably don't remember, it was General Stormin Norman Schwarzkopf back in the late 80s, early 90s, and he says, once you're a scientist, give me an answer, not a hedge, right? So when he said that, I was like, whoa, I got to dump everything I learned from Rutgers and get into statistics and math and climate cycles, things that don't change real fast, like physics. So it really changed how we thought and forever changed. And he said, you're a scientist, give me an answer. Don't tell me there's a 30% chance of snow today. Give me the answer, not a hedge.
So you kind of already answered this, but at that point in your life, who or what inspired you to start your research?
I would say it was him, just because, I always joked. He was a four-star general, Central Command at MacDill Air Force Base. I was in charge of about a few hundred F-16 fighter pilots, keeping them from killing themselves, young kids. They were probably 20, 30-year-old, 20-year-olds, flying F-16 fighter aircrafts, and not real good at it. So I don't know. I think it was just him because I knew him before he was famous. And then a year later, he could have been president of the United States. Everybody loved him before. He was a great general. So he really changed how I think.
And then what does your research process involve? What was the first part of weather or climate that you really started looking at during your research?
Well, so one of the comments he made that is rare, so physics and meteorology, you're always changing your forecast. It's physics. It's changing. Got new data, change your forecast. In this case, it was statistics and cycles. So it was really getting to the point where, how can I make a forecast that's not going to change? Mm-hmm. Months out, weeks out, a year out. And that's what we do today, is a year out forecast that doesn't change once we make it. So whatever, right now we just released our March 2023 forecast for next year, which I think we have pretty cold and snowy. We're not going to change that once we issue it.
So what were the first cycles that you looked at in climate that, for our listeners who don't know or who aren't familiar, what were the first cycles that you looked at that helped you understand these patterns?
So really start with statistics, the math side of it. So if you've had a really hot March in the Northeast U.S., what happens the next year? Just a curiosity, right? Well, guess what? When you have a one standard deviation above average March, so a really hot March, the next year it's about 90% chance the next March is cold and snowy. That's a 90% chance, right? I mean, that's what statistics of 150 years, 160 years of data tells you. Why would you go against that? Right, so it really started there. And then back in my day in the 80s, at Rutgers, right, it was physics and computers were coming online and modeling. But there was a gentleman called the Madian-Julian oscillation cycle. So Madian and Julian, I think there's two guys, and they had a more statistical cycle. Mm-hmm. That when something happens in the Indian Ocean, tropical, you know, flare up of thunderstorms, there's a pulse downstream all across the world. And it was very predictive. But they were old school. That's what the thought was back then, because physics and computer modeling was coming online. So it was, they were dumb. And now we're learning today, 30 some years later, their statistical cycle was invaluable at predicting the weather globally, right? So something they were thinking, like we do today with statistics and cycles, worked really well. But they kind of got pushed to the side because of physics and modeling. Today we're realizing, whoa, wait a minute, physics doesn't have the whole answer long term.
Mm-hmm. And so how long did all your research take?
Well, again, some of it started in the Air Force, and then a lot of it after the Air Force. Just, you know, so, 20 years ago, we were doing all this by hand and computers and Excel, right? You know, today it's Amazon Web Services. It's, I say, if I had to buy the computers that we need today to do what we do, it's, I think, $71 million worth of computers. I don't have $71 million. So, thank God for Amazon Web Services. So we're able to do stuff very quickly, very fast, because of another innovative technology. Amazon didn't exist 20, 30 years ago, mm-hmm. right? So they didn't have the computing stuff that they offer today. So because of them, we can do what we do, right? Because of what we do, other people can do stuff too. So that's just the way science kind of builds on itself.
So your work took over 20 years. Why did it take so long?
It's not that it really took so long. It was just commercializing. So the last 20 years, we've commercialized it with big retailers, the Targets, AutoZone, Kohl's, J.P. Morgan, Wall Street, agriculture, finance, you know, you name it. We have those Coca-Cola International. We use Coke. We predict Coke sales everywhere in the world out a year. You know, so they're predicting how much inventory they're going to need, you know, everywhere you drink Coke. So it was really just commercializing it. So as it, technology grew with the automation of the Amazons of the world. So as they, we used to do, you know, 15 years ago, we maybe did 7,000 locations. And then maybe we did 200,000 locations. And today we do 32 million locations. So it's every mile on Earth. Right? So it's just scaled with the companies like Amazon.
And I'm assuming you couldn't have done all of that alone. So did you kind of have a team of people working with you?
Yeah, I would encourage anybody that starts a business, don't do it by yourself, because you can have this great idea and you think you can do it all yourself. It's really hard. My first business years ago, you know, 20, 30 years ago, my first business, I was me and a couple guys, one guy. And it was very hard. We worked 20 hours a day, 7 days a week for a couple of years. Crazy hard.
And
right?
who was that other person that you worked with?
Well, it was a former Air Force guy, right? Oh. So that was the first company. So my second time, this is the second business, which started 20 years ago. We have a whole team of scientists, meteorologists, programmers, right? You have to have that skill set of, you know, I'm not a great programmer, so we have great programmers. You know, I'm not a great statistician entirely, you know, so we hire some great statisticians.
So your team is kind of like divided in different
Yeah, so they're
categories.
All meteorologists, mathematicians, you know, business advisors, right? They're just a different skill set. And they're all multifaceted, right? So they kind of, they're good meteorologists, but they can write. We have Chrissy Klinger. She can write. Like meteorologists, we're like left brain, right brain kind of thing. We're scientists, but we can't write. So she can do both. So she writes a lot of cool reports.
So flash forward to the year 2002, you co-founded Weather Trends International with the technology developed from your research. Can you walk us through the process of founding the company?
It's not easy. Like I said, so, first thing I did was I had a sales guy, and you know, he says, hey, this is a cool technology. Let's go get the biggest company in the world, Walmart. I'm like, are you crazy? So we went and saw Walmart, and they liked us. They were two guys in a garage, literally, that we were in our apartments, houses. We did it, and we signed them 3 months later, and then got Walmart was the first client, and then Johnson & Johnson, and then Anheuser-Busch, and it was just kind of a steamrolling effect down the hill. So it's a process.
So
right?
Do you know how many companies you're working with?
I think it's about 143 Fortune 1000 companies. So it's, you know, like I said, name something you drink or buy. We probably have, you know, Target, AutoZone, Kohl's, you know. Shoe companies, you name it, we got them.
And so along the way, were there any obstacles or challenges that you faced, like, in starting the company?
Oh, I don't know, a few thousand hurdles. So, yeah, anything there's, it. I don't want to say there was one huge hurdle. It's just a lot of hurdles, right? Mm-hmm. A client says, no, I really want you to do this. Like, okay, now you got to make your technology do that. And like, well, we really want it to do this, right? It never ends.
And what kind of kept you going? Like, was there any thought or motivation that, like, kept you going through all that?
For me, as a scientist, you know, it's just innovation, right? It's just that this is something that I've always had a passion with from a kid and 6-year-old in Hawaii, right? So figuring it out. Why did it rain 100 inches in Hawaii, right? How did that happen? Right? So it's really trying to figure out why things happen. And for me, it's not just what's unique about our whole team. It's not just predicting the weather, but an outcome. We like to predict something. Right? So just saying it's going to snow today, well, what's it mean for, like this time last year was the hottest period in March history. And today we're the coldest in history. So things you bought last year, maybe you bought shorts and sandals and drank a lot of cold beverages because it was hot. And today it's freezing cold and snowy. You're not buying that stuff. So there's a huge decline in sales. So that figuring that stuff out and helping companies figure that out mm-hmm. and predict it was really my passion.
Well, I hate to stop us here, but right now we're going to pause for a quick break. And when we return, we're going to go actually into depth about how this technology works and its applications across the globe. This is Teen Scientist on WDIY.
For programming support on WDIY, we thank East Penn Sanitation, a local Lehigh Valley family-run business since 1982, working to keep the Lehigh Valley clean and green, offering residential, commercial, and industrial waste disposal and recycling services. For more information, 610-759-6398 or eastpennsanitation.com.
This is Ari Shapiro, host of All Things Considered, reminding you that WDIY runs on member support. Thanks to listeners coming together year after year since 1995 making membership contributions, WDIY has been able to grow into the vital public resource that it is today. All the programs you hear on WDIY are made possible by listeners. From NPR's All Things Considered and Morning Edition, to locally produced programs like Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert, HealthBeat, Teen Connect, and public affairs programs you won't find anywhere else in the Lehigh Valley. Now is the time to support your listening during this membership drive. Make your contribution today by visiting WDIY.org or call 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Raina Malhotra, and I'm currently inside Weather Trends International with CEO, Captain Bill Kirk. Earlier, we talked about what inspired you to work in this field, and we just finished discussing the process of co-founding Weather Trends International after 25 years of research. So now we're going to transition into one of the more exciting parts. What exactly does this predictive technology do?
All right, so I'm not going to predict your wedding or, you know, next July 4th. So it does, in theory. It's a statistical math-based approach, and I say I'm oversimplifying it. It's a trillion times a trillion times a billion statistics. So if you know math, it's 61 factorial. It's a lot of zeros, right? So it starts with that, predicting, and then 24 climate cycles. You've heard of El Niño, La Niña. These are oceanic cycles. Ocean gets hot, ocean gets cold. Right, it's that simple, but it changes our weather all over the world, right? So it's those statistics and cycles then to predict three things: temperature, rainfall, and snowfall. That's it, temp, rain, and snow. Now, temperature could be growing degree days for farmers, heating degree days for energy companies, cooling degree days for energy companies. So it's the temperature, rainfall, snowfall. But if I can predict those by week, by mile, out 1 year, everywhere on Earth, then I can predict other stuff. That's the goal. So those are the three things that come out of the core technology.
And then can you break down how exactly the technology works?
Again, just a lot of crazy math. So like I said, if it wasn't for Amazon, there are times where we scale up to, you know, thousands and thousands, you know, several thousand servers, which are literally, I don't know, 15 computers each, right? So it's hundreds of thousands of computers basically trying to do all the math in a day, right? So you got to do it very quickly. And that wasn't possible 10 years ago. So once the technology, you know, crunches all that data, and it is, what's neat about meteorologists is we've taken the human emotion out. Meteorologists love storms and hurricanes and floods. It's going to be the coldest winter in history and a lot of snow days, right? I mean, that's what we like to do as meteorologists. We took that out, that emotion out of the process. So it's purely AI, scientific. You know, there's no emotion in it. Unfortunately, in meteorology, there's just too much of that. They want to predict the worst winter in history this year, right? I mean, and it just, you let that human emotion get in the way of what the data says.
And how accurate is this technology compared to standard weekly weather forecasting that we're used to seeing on TV?
Well, that's a great analogy. We used to just say, okay, our error is, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 degrees. Well, what's that mean? You know, well, if you put it in the context of a day one forecast, whatever you're hearing for today typically has error of 3 to 4 degrees. Whatever somebody said last night for today, it'll be off by 3 to 4 degrees. Now, 10 days out, it'll be off by 5, 6, 8 degrees. And like 14 days out, it can be off by 7 to 15 degrees. So there's a lot of error as you go out, which is short-range physics. That's the problem with physics. Our errors typically has been audited to be as accurate as a week two forecast. So whatever somebody's saying for next week, whatever we said a year ago for next week is more accurate. You know, so it has much less error than a week two forecast. A lot of cases, for most of the population centers, which happen to be near Tokyo's near an ocean, New York's near an ocean, where most people live or near coastlines, we're typically 1, 2, 3 degrees. So it's comparable to like a day 4 or 5 forecast.
So yeah. Your technology can predict weather a year in advance, for, like from today?
Correct. It's a rolling year, so it's constantly out.
And then does it update, like based on every
day? We don't change it. That's one of the things the general said to me. So unfortunately in physics, the models are changing every day. But the statistics don't, right? So when we, like I said, we've had the hottest March in history, what happens the next year? There's a 90% chance it's cold and snowy. That statistic can't change, right? Mm-hmm. So if I had in 2016, we had a really hot March, the statistic is set. Now, it's converse. If you've had a really cold March in the Northeast, cold, snowy March in the East, guess what? Expect 2 or 3 in a row for whatever reason. They tend to come in 2s or 3s, right? So when we've had a cold, snowy March, one standard deviation cold, we tend to predict a couple of those in a row because it happens very frequently. So that's once that statistic is set, no matter what it is, we don't change the forecast. And that's what allows big companies to plan a year out.
You know? And so besides like the common people just checking the weather, what are the actual applications of this predictive technology?
So again, our first thing was Walmart, right? So the reason we went to Walmart is because they've got the air conditioner guy who's a kid out of college at the time, right? And he's managing $6 billion worth of air conditioners. Everything Walmart sells is just, every category is huge. Clothes, $50 billion. You know, I mean, it's just huge industry. So we wanted to help them with inventory. You know, I mean, if you get that number wrong, right, let's say it's the hottest summer in history or whatever, 10 years, and you don't have enough air conditioners, you can't get more air conditioners, right? So you either get the number right or you miss the opportunity. Or if it's the coldest summer in 10 years, now you've got billions of air conditioners that nobody bought, right? So helping with the inventory, where to put it, when to promote it, when to do advertising. How often you've heard, I heard one here recently, it's a great weekend to put down your Halts fertilizer on your lawn, you know? And yet the year they did that, there was like 60% of the country was covered in snow. Mm-hmm. I can't put it down because there's snow on the ground. And now you're mad because you want to go outside, but you can't because there's snow on the ground. Right? So you got to be careful with your messaging. And so that's how we help companies. Don't do that. Today's not a good day to run the ad about putting fertilizer on your lawn because it's snowing outside.
So what other industries does your technology help?
So the big ones are retailers, right? They sell you stuff, right? They got to get the right product, right place, right time, you know, mm-hmm. typical supply chain. People that make stuff, Coca-Cola, they make Cokes, you know, Anheuser-Busch makes beer. You can't drink beer yet, but they make a lot of beer, right? So, we found little rules of thumb, this power of 1 degree. So every degree hotter, you drink about 1% more Coke. If it's 1 degree hotter, you drink about 2% more like Gatorade. And if it's 1 degree hotter, you drink about 3% more iced tea, right? So that helps Coke understand. So if it's 10 degrees hotter, 30% increase in iced tea sales. They need to know that week by week, out a year, right? So it's really helping them with the, so it's Wall Street. Wall Street wants to know, how are these stocks going to do? If I tell you it's the hottest summer in 20 years in the U.S. for Coke, and their sales are going to be up 6%, Wall Street's going to say, woohoo, Coke's going to do great, right? So they're going to, how that stock will perform is Coke's probably a good stock versus if it's the coldest summer in 10 years and Coke sales are down 5%, that stock's not going to do so well.
What about the travel industry?
It's really endless, right? I always say, where can we not go, right? You know, Bridezilla's, right, with the wedding planners and travel planning and sprig blank planning. Really, it's endless what we could do. So we just look for the areas where, you know, hey, we got to make money, you know, what we're doing, right? So you got to, if you spend time and energy in something, you know, you can't, got to keep the lights on and pay the bills. So we've looked for the retailers, suppliers, Wall Street, agriculture is a big one. My goal personally is really to get into humanitarian aspects of it. We've done some of that with like the Allergy and Asthma Network. Mm-hmm. Hot, dry spring, what do you think? Bad allergy. You're sneezing. You've got, you know, asthma suffering, right? So we've got into that last couple of years and helping people with those diseases. So that's kind of my passion.
And is there any other technology out there in the world that's like this, or do you see any technology like this being developed soon?
Well, there are a lot of people trying, you know, and not everyone's caught us yet. You know, I say we like anything, you're the tip of a spear, right? You know, you got to keep innovating because people will come behind you. They will copy and try to re-engineer what you've done. Mm-hmm. Nobody's caught us yet. IBM's tried. They haven't caught us. So that's key. You really have to constantly innovate. So it's not say in physics, right, and as a physicist, that's my degree, we're trained to think that way. And it's really hard for a meteorologist to think what I said earlier is old school, right? It's statistics and cycles, right? That the two gentlemen MJO cycle, they were laughed at 30 years ago. And now they're heroes because their cycle really works.
So in what ways has this technology and forecasting method been recognized? Have you won any awards for it?
Yeah, so I mean, again, I always say, you know, awards are great. We've got about 18 of them. The one I liked the most, and I was very proud of, and it was totally shocking. In fact, my computer got hacked into their system, so don't tell Forbes. Forbes ranked us the fifth most promising company in America some years ago. And again, fifth out of 13,000 small businesses. And we're like, no way. That day, I was so nervous. I'm like, oh, please, I just want to be in the top 100. I want to be top 100. Let me be top 100, you know, just to, you know. It was, you know, and so my IT guy hacked into the computers. It's like, I could tell you, Bill, they say number five. So Forbes doesn't know that, right? So, but we were number five. So again, we have a long way to go to live up to that, I think. You know, I mean, we're, you know, it's great that people recognize what you're doing is cool. And it certainly can help your business. We have a long way to go to live up to that.
Well, congratulations. That's extremely impressive. And as the CEO, do you have any plans for the company in the future? Like, where do you, like, plan to keep this going?
So I could use my Air Force analogy, right? Top secret, I can tell you, but then I gotta, you know, gotta kill you. I want to see it go somewhere. You know, I'm getting older, right? I mean, I want to see it up 20 years. I want to see it go where all my employees and team can see it, you know, be, you know, ingrained in something really cool. What, you know, we've talked to Microsoft. Could it be ingrained in malaria prediction, you know, Bill Gates and stuff like that, right? I mean, where can it go? It's really endless. It can be any, you know, really you don't know where it'll end up, right? So we build it and maybe they'll come. So
I want to circle back into how you got into this field of work. You obviously grew up in Hawaii in a completely different setting, and I think the education systems have definitely grown and changed since then. So I'm just curious as to what kind of resources that you had access to in elementary, middle, and high school that kind of allowed you to pursue your interest in such a unique field.
Well, and again, in Hawaii back in the day in the 70s and 80s, right? So wasn't famous for a great education system. So again, I always joke that I went to a public school. I couldn't spell my own name as a first grader. So mom says, "Up, we got to put you in a private school because you got to get a little smarter than that. You got to be able to spell your name." And I couldn't do simple math. It was crazy. So blessed to, you know, the school that I was able to go to in Hawaii, and you know, really had a teacher, a second grade teacher who to this day I would love to go back and meet. You know, who worked with me and not only got me that, they held me back, right? You're too not smart, Billy. You got to go back. So she not only got me past the grade I was supposed to be, but she got me past the next grade. So she got me really advanced into my next grade. So really changed my life. And I always, that's why education teachers, you know, you're going to find a good one that will change your life potentially. And she did, second grade teacher. So it's important, right? I mean, I think you have to start with your passion. And for me as a kid in Hawaii, it was just that weather thing. So it wasn't, we didn't have great science and technology back then, and there really wasn't even computers back then, right? I mean, but you could do things empirically, right? Why did where I live at the base of a 3,000-foot Ko'olau beautiful mountain get 100 inches of rain, yet way over here, just 5 miles away, only got 20 for a year, right? So 20 to 100 to 200 inches over 4 or 5 miles is a rain shadow effect. But you could study that, right? I mean, it was just a math, basically. Figure out every few feet I go, I get another inch of rain. More rain, you know.
Were there any clubs, or were you involved in any extracurricular activities?
Well, way back in high school, I try to remember my days in high school. For me, it was always just, you know, I loved studying, and I was just, again, math and science were my thing. I was okay in English, you know, so I did good in high school. And then, like I said, I got to Rutgers, and it was complicated, you know, it was hard, and I did not, you know, and I think you experience that with anything you do. You may think, wow, I didn't know it was going to be this hard in college, you know, and I didn't know the calculus and physics was going to be that crazy. But no, I just think when you love something, it's not a chore, it's a passion. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, and then outside of this field of weather and forecasting, because I feel like that's kind of what you're known for, do you have any other hobbies? Did you play any sports? What do you like to do in your free time?
Yeah, well, I mean, so we moved from Hawaii to Virginia as a kid, you know, so I went to Virginia my last couple of years in high school, so you know, I was on the football team, run. In Hawaii, I ran a couple marathons, you know, 26-mile marathons. I mean, again, I joke my little six-year-old today, she's warp speed fast, so I guess she's got some of daddy's genes. So I can't run that fast anymore. But running was always kind of a passion as a kid too.
So I want to ask you, if you were in the shoes of a young aspiring researcher, what piece of advice would you give to them?
I think the big thing is you got to, you know, they always say, you know, go get a job, you can get money out. No, I think you got to follow your passion to an extent, right? I mean, but you also got to have some, you know, like, what can I do with this, right? I mean, again, what, you know, I got to live, you know, I've got to maybe have a family and pay the bills, right? I mean, so you got to find what is the niche that you can do. Like long-range weather forecasting, right? Nobody was doing it. Nobody wanted to buy it. Nobody had a budget for it, right? So we really had to figure out who would buy this, you know, Walmarts, Targets, Kohl's. We figured out that first, that, okay, well, we'll have this cool technology, but who's going to embrace it, right? You can make something that's really cool that nobody wants or needs, or it's, we know a gentleman that's got this whole virtual reality goggles, you know, that 10 years ago, nobody wanted, nobody understood it. Yet today, now it's mainstream, right? Everybody wants it, right? So he was like 10 years before his time. So the good news for him, he was just patient, you know, he was patient, and now today he's a rock star, right? Because everybody wants virtual reality, you know, technology. So sometimes you might be ahead of the game, you know, and we were maybe 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now we're not. You know?
And so what kind of outreach does Weather Trends International have for younger generations? Do you offer internships or do you allow younger people to come in?
Yeah, well, we like having folks come in. We have occasionally, yeah, every summer we'll do, you know, try to bring an intern in, you know, to help, you know, at least if they're interested in science and meteorology or programming. It's hard. We're a small company, so we have, you know, maybe 15 folks here that any given day. So obviously COVID challenged all that, you know, in the day. But yeah, no, we're definitely open to, you know, kids that are interested in science and meteorology for sure here in Lehigh Valley.
And your journey in this industry has been long, and I would guess that it hasn't always been easy. So what's the biggest setback that you faced, and how did you overcome it?
Yeah, like I said, I think it's more, I don't know that I haven't had a huge setback. I mean, there's been a few along the way, but it's just been a lot, it's just a lot of little hurdles. There's always going to be something that, you know, and you just have to kind of embrace it, right? I mean, life's going to throw you a curveball constantly, right? So don't get wrapped up about it. You know, look, it's a challenge, right? It's a challenge, and I'm going to embrace the challenge, and I'm going to get over this, you know? And so it's like a marathon, right? You know, running 26 miles, you have so many, I can't do it at mile 10, at mile 20. And for sure at mile 25, you're like, this is over. I can't do it. I'm not doing it. So you really just have to look at it as this is a journey. You know, life is, it's not the destination, right? It's just everything you do in life along the way. I can look back at things that I thought at the time were really challenging were actually, you know what? That was, if I hadn't had that hurdle, I would not have embraced it and done this. And if I hadn't had that hurdle, I wouldn't have changed and done this. Right, so each of those challenges, I think, you learn from.
Who was your biggest supporter throughout this process? Growing up, were your parents or were your family members super supportive of this?
They didn't know what I was going to do. They just didn't want to be a scientist, you know. You know, initially, I thought I was going to be a minister of all things, you know, and then I ended up at Rutgers in science, right? I mean, I went a totally different path. So I think, again, you have to be open-minded because this was not initially, I thought of weather as a hobby as a kid, and, you know, I was interested, passionate about it. It was something I loved. But I couldn't connect the dots. Like, what do weather people do? You know, I mean, television, you know, right? Yeah. You just don't know what are all the applications for what you do. So now I, you know, parents blessed that they, you know, again, you know, my daughter, right? I mean, they're your child, right? You want to make sure they go to school and do what they love to do and help them along the way. And then, you know, 18, okay, go do it.
So is there anything else you would like to share about you, your groundbreaking technology, or about Weather Trends International?
I just think you have to do what you love to do. If you love what you're doing every day, like you're really good at this, love what you're doing. If you love what you're doing, it's not a job. It's passion. And it's just, you know, you're going to, you know, you'll be good at it.
And where can listeners go to learn more about this technology and about you?
Just WT360.com. Again, got lots of videos on there, and check us out.
Well, thank you so much for your time and inviting me into this amazing facility. It's been really great to hear about your journey with weather forecasting technology and to hear about all the progress that you've made over these many years. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
And thank you so much to our listeners for tuning in to Teen Scientist for today's special episode. I'm Raina Malhotra, and I'll see you next time.